listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And with us today are Natalia Munoz, host of Vaya con Munoz on WHMP, and Rick Hurst, publisher of The African American Point of View. Welcome to you both.
Glad to be here.
Hi, Adam.
This week, an arrest was made in the 1992 murder of Lisa Ziegert of Agawam, Massachusetts. Prosecutors say DNA evidence helped to point to Gary Shara of West Springfield as the suspect in the cold case. Here's Lisa Ziegert's mother, Dee Ziegert.
Can you imagine how much the process has changed in the last 25 years? And new minds, new ways of looking at it have brought us here today. And we can't thank them enough. Hope was getting a little flickery. I mean, it's 25 and a half years.
Natalia, this case received a lot of attention when it happened back in 1992, and it's been in the news from time to time since then. There certainly have been other cases through the years, though, that haven't received the press attention that this one has. Is that because of the nature of the case or a result of a media bias?
I think media plays a very important role in what gets covered. I think if you have a good relationship with the media or if you're from a certain community, the media will pay a lot more attention to what your concerns are, will pay a lot more concern to what your grievances are.
And so what's the solution to that?
I think one of the solutions is to have media that is not run by one part of society, but have media that is diverse. And then you'll have a better relationship with the communities. You know, another part of this, though, is police departments that have good relationships with their communities, it's likelier that they'll be able to crack cases. Not all the time, but there is a higher likelihood because there are those good relationships. I'm thinking of, you know, the murders that happened in Springfield. How many of them continue as cold cases forever and ever? And what does that say about the kind of relationship that the Springfield Police Department has with the communities right here in Springfield?
Rick, a lot's changed since this crime took place, including the use of DNA testing. Back then, it was in its infancy, but as science has improved, it's something that is used quite a bit to either convict or exonerate suspects in cases like this. So DNA evidence can both shake our confidence in the justice system and redeem it. What about that?
Well, you're certainly right. Frankly, I think it's just important on both sides. I mean, listen to how many people have been exonerated who are on death row. I mean, if it was a small number, you'd say, well, but it's a huge number who have been exonerated. And other people who aren't on death row but are in prison find themselves liberated because of DNA. It's good you can use DNA to catch criminals, but it's just as good that you can use DNA to get people out of jail who shouldn't be there.
This week in Bridgeport, Connecticut, MGM announced plans for a $675 million casino there. The project still needs legislative approval. Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim says that the resort could help the cash-strapped state and create thousands of jobs.
There's too many people out there that are hurting, that need an opportunity. We're here collectively to try and create that opportunity to make what is a difficult situation in Connecticut a better one.
Of course, MGM is about a year away from opening a $900 million casino here in Springfield. Mayor Dominic Sarno says he believes the company is fully committed to the resort in his city. Rick, is this latest development in Bridgeport something Springfield leaders should be worried about?
I don't think Springfield needs to worry about it at all. I think it's a defensive move on MGM's part to try to block the Indian casinos. And I think it's a desperate move because if you think about it, they have to get this thing approved by the governor and the legislature. And if the governor approves it, he loses at least $500 million over the next couple of years because he'll be violating his agreement with the Indian casinos. But from a location point of view, it's a great place for MGM.
Of course, the operators of the two casinos in Connecticut planning a third one in East Windsor, a direct move to what's going on in Springfield. Natalia, what do you think about all of this?
I think it just sounds fantastic when casinos say, oh, we're going to have 7,000 jobs. And nobody says, well, what are those jobs and how much do they pay and do they come with benefits? And also, I mean, I understand MGM is a casino and they are betting on creating a new agreement with the state of Connecticut, which has already told Mohegan and Foxwood, you are the only game in town that we will permit.
I also think it's a legal maneuver because, you know, they'll never get it initially, but they're saying they want to do it in two phases. Give us permission to build And then later on, when we built, we can replace the $500 million that you're going to lose. If that happens and they're denied it, the license, they're in position to sue.
It's poker.
It's poker.
Meanwhile, in Berkshire County, the controversy continues surrounding a Pittsfield Museum's plans to sell off a chunk of its art collection, including works by Norman Rockwell, to help finance renovations and boost its endowment. This week, the Mass Cultural Council came out against the Berkshire Museum's plan and threatened to pull grant money as a result. Natalia, the State Attorney General's office is also looking into all of this, but what about this move from the Cultural Council?
You know, to me, it sounds like people are having a very public fight. It reminds me of the Democratic presidential primaries where like-minded people fought on Facebook. I don't quite get what the Mass Cultural Council is doing having this public fight with the Berkshire Museum.
Rick, this development goes along with a lot of pressure in the arts community calling for the sell-off to be canceled, and there are some who do support the museum in this case. Given the financial troubles that the museum seems to be experiencing, what should the leaders be doing here at the museum?
Well, first, I'm on the Mass Humanities Board, and they get a lot of their funding from the Cultural Council. So with that said, I agree with Natalia. I think the real issue here is this thing is being fought out in the public, and it should have been dealt with way before it got this far. And it should have been resolved in a way that both parties could have agreed. I don't agree with selling off all those paintings. I don't think it's a great idea. But if they've determined that they are going to go under without selling those paintings, it's a budgetary decision that they should make.
And finally, Natalia, Puerto Rico, of course, is in the process of sorting things out after Hurricane Maria. I know you've spent a lot of time there over the years. You have family there. What have you been hearing from Puerto Rico?
Nothing. I haven't been hearing anything. All communication's been cut off. It's been like this for more than 24 hours now. And the good news is that I did read this morning that Governor Cuomo is going there with a contingent of engineers to help the island's electrical grid get back up and working as soon as possible. And that will go a long way to preserving food, getting good water, potable water, and getting us out of the catastrophe in which we are right now.
Natalia Munoz, host of Via Con Munoz on WHMP, and Rick Hurst of the African American Point of View, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Adam.
More than welcome.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And remember, you can catch The Shortlist at any time, wherever you get your podcasts, or at nepr.net/podcast. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.